Hello, once again. It's 7 p.m. on the East Coast, and this is No Chaser. First off, before I even bring in Mac, the host of this show, the co-host, I want to apologize, and he'll probably be doing the same, to any of you listeners who tuned in last week through that debacle we had and got really no show. Hopefully, through Blog Talk Radio, we got the situation remedied, and we won't have that problem in the future. But with that being said, I am JT, a.k.a. The sidekick to the man who is the host of this show, Mac Williams. And let's bring in my man Mac and start this show off right.
Hey, what's up? Thank you. Hey, in response to what Jerry said, I just want to say what he said. That's it. All right. Now, I do hate that happened last week, but, you know, Jerry put it eloquently, you know, but it's live radio. Things happen. Doesn't mean we like it, but it does happen. So those who did tune in, I'm sorry you didn't, but I know Vic loaded a – I think Vic loaded a show for us. I think
yes.
He did.
Yeah,
so
did.
Somebody did get some kind of show. You probably got a rerun of something that we did before, but – to those who did tune in, to the loyal listeners, I just want to say thank you. It's been a great week. It's a good weekend. The 4th of July will be next week, which I always look forward to, spending time with the fam.
Always.
And like I said, I've had a great week. A lot has happened, so let's get to it. The first thing I want to get to is the craziness of last night's draft. A lot of trades, a lot of crazy picks. This is like, honestly, I don't want to put nobody down because I love. But overall, this draft was a weak draft, I would venture to say, just me taking a stab at it. I would say that this draft will go down as something that we won't be talking about much or be forgettable, except for a few. People like Trey Burke. What's my man's name? Tim Hardaway Jr. You know, some standouts. What the Cleveland Cavaliers did, I have no freaking idea. But maybe it's something that I don't know. But maybe it's something I just don't know. You know, I need to see the guy, but I don't even know who this guy is.
You're not by yourself.
No, yeah, I know. I'm just like, what?
Yeah.
So, the draft was wild. I think the wildest thing of the evening was the trade from Boston, between Boston and Brooklyn.
I still can't get over that one.
Yeah, I'm not really surprised. Because once I knew Doc left, I knew somebody was – I knew either – my thought was Kevin Garnett would retire, Paul Pierce would stay on maybe another 1 or 2 years, him and Rondo, you know, rebuild a little bit, do their thing. But I didn't expect, you know, two of those guys, those two together to go to Brooklyn. I think it's a great move. Do I think it is a game changer in the East Coast? I do, but I don't think it's much, and I'll tell you why. I think it is, and I could be wrong. I take that back, because I was thinking, I was like, this might be another case of the Spurs, even though the Spurs don't play like, of course, Brooklyn will not play like as disciplined or as whatever Spurs, but I was saying, like, you got older players mixed in with some youthful players, and, you know, do I think that they'll be able to beat the Heat? Who knows? That's what the regular season's for, to get ready for the playoffs and see where you come out. I can't wait to see that first game because that's going to tell a lot.
Sure.
But Brooklyn people, like, I think they're happy. Like I said, we'll find out who real Brooklyn fans are and who the real Celtics fans are, if they're going to jump ship. We'll see what happens.
I don't know, man.
I don't know. That's why I said I have to see the whole season next year. I mean, you really have to watch the season because Everything that's being moved around now, you won't know until it gets mid-season. Then you'll probably know who's going to be what and what's going to happen or what have you.
Yeah, but the problem I have is this. The Brooklyn Nets had a young team.
Mm-hmm.
They have a young team. They got some salaries that are bad salaries for them. I think Chris Humphries is one of them. I think
right.
Gerald Wallace is another one of them. That bad salaries that they're trying to get rid of, which they did, and he pushed them off to the Celtics. But in return,
mm-hmm.
they're getting Kevin Garnett, 37-year-old,
mm-hmm.
damn near 40-year-old Kevin Garnett,
mm-hmm.
getting a Paul Pierce on the downside of his career,
mm-hmm.
and damn sure getting Jason Terry on the downside of his
mm-hmm.
career.
Mm-hmm.
So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you're getting three players,
mm-hmm.
true, that two of the three players are Hall of Fame players,
mm-hmm.
but they're on the downside of the career.
Yeah.
And you got Joe Johnson.
Mm-hmm.
Now you bring in Paul Pierce. Hello?
Mm-hmm.
You got Kevin Garnett.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you bring in Kevin Garnett, and you got Brook Lopez. Hello?
Right.
So the starting five was like this. It had, on the Brooklyn Nets, it had Darren Williams,
mm-hmm.
Joe Johnson, I think
mm-hmm.
it was Gerald Wallace, Chris,
mm-hmm.
I think Chris Humphries, and
mm-hmm.
you had Brook Lopez.
Mm-hmm.
So you got rid of those two guys, and you bring
right.
in Kevin Garnett
mm-hmm.
and Paul Pierce.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Kevin Garnett needs the ball to be effective. Paul Pierce
mm-hmm.
needs the ball to be effective. Joe Johnson needs the ball to be effective.
Mm-hmm.
Brook Lopez needs the ball to be effective. And also Darren Williams.
Mm-hmm.
It's more of a shooter than he is a distributor or facilitator. So
right.
there's only one ball on the court
mm-hmm.
for five players.
Well,
with a rookie coach, I can't see it, man. I really can't see it. It makes no sense to me.
Well, let me say this to you as a person who coaches players.
Mm-hmm.
The key is for one is for Kevin Garnett and for Paul Pierce to buy in. In the same way, I mean, where you're coming from right now, I see that. But there are a lot of unanswered questions. One is Garnett and Pierce willing to, for the sake of winning and winning now, or winning another championship or vying for another championship, will they buy into it? You know, will they buy into whatever that is, whether that's Paul Pierce coming off the bench, whether it's Garnett coming off the bench. To be honest with you, I like the lineup of the five that I saw on there. I loved it. I thought Joe Johnson, you have, what's his name, Darren Williams.
Right.
And you have Kevin Garnett, you have Brook Lopez, and then you have a Paul Pierce. I mean, that can work. That's to be honest with you, that's a formidable team.
On paper,
with a lot of height,
on
a
paper.
Lot of size. But here's the key.
On paper,
that's what I was going to say. But the key is, if they're going to accept it, and as a coach, that's what I ask as a rookie coach. Which, yes, he's a rookie coach, but he's not any rookie coach. He has some respect when he comes in the door. And he can ask them, look, here's what we're going to do. The question is Paul Pierce, and is everybody willing to accept their roles and play this way and to play the style of ball they want to play, and is everybody willing to sacrifice to win now? That's the whole key to everything. Because that five
yes.
can work. That
yeah,
five can work, but you have to get guys to switch positions, to play a little bit less or what have you. I mean, that's
mm-hmm.
what the regular season's for. We're not going to say that five is. So if that five is not the five, then that means somebody's coming off the bench. So what you need to find out off the break is who's coming off the bench.
Ooh. Well,
here's the thing. If a Ginobili, who was hot at the time when he started going to the bench, accepted it, and you've had other guys that have accepted it, I'm just saying that's the key. As far as the 37-year-old thing, 37 doesn't even bother me anymore. After I saw these finals with a Tim Duncan who played his behind off at 37, I don't doubt nobody else at 37 no more, man. I just don't. And not to say he's a superstar, and he's not Duncan, But Garnett can still get it done. And then you also have to understand, these guys are not carrying the weight anymore. They don't have to carry all the weight. It's not, okay, everything goes as me and Garnett go or Paul Pierce goes. Now, that's why you mix veterans. If you have that pleasure, you mix veterans with youth, because then the youth can do the hard work or do other things. The other guys can get more rest and come help you and go in spots. So, your concerns are valid on paper and all that. Trust me, it's valid. I have no doubt. No doubt. So, I have no doubt, but,
I understand that Jason Kidd is well-respected as a player, but now he's in a different role. And one way or the other, you look at it, he's still a rookie coach. So he's the coach. Paul Pierce, Kevin Garnett, and company on that team are going to look at him as a coach. I understand he was a player, but he's got to turn a different role now and put a suit and tie on and become the coach. So he's got to being a rookie coach and being a player is two different things. He proved himself on the court. Now he's going to prove himself from the bench.
And you're right.
Let me finish.
Go ahead.
And the fact is that they're the only guys, if I'm not mistaken, on this team that won a championship. So Paul Pierce and the three guys, those three guys, Jason Terry, Paul Pierce, and Kevin Garnett, are the only guys on that team who won a championship. So you don't think they're going to want a lead role on the team?
No, I don't really think so. You know why?
Wow.
No, I'm just telling you.
Mm-hmm.
Because they just got through doing it for the last 2 years in Boston. They were starting, but if you listen to both Garnett and you listen to Paul Pierce, they never talk like it's about me, give me. They always talked about team. They always talked about we make sacrifices so that we can win. Garnett is probably the one of the most team-oriented guys I've seen. He don't care. He's a loyal teammate. He's not a greedy, selfish guy. He tells the truth. I'm telling you. I've heard him and Paul Pierce. When I hear a person talk the way they talk, I don't think they're going to have a problem. I really don't, because they want to win. And their maturity. See, here's the thing. That's where the maturity comes in. The years of I've already won. So they already know. This ain't about me and about us leading because we won a championship. They're not. If they had won a championship and they were LeBron's age, okay, I'd probably give you something. I'd say, you know what, that might be a problem. But if you're 30 over 30, you've won a championship. You've been through the wars and the struggles at this point, and you know in your heart you got a young talented team around you, man. They don't want to lift heavy. They want to live light. They want to be able to play and keep going, and that's what you want. So to me, it's not going to be a problem with Paul Pierce and them. It's going to be just accepting the. It's going to be probably with the young guys accepting the role and accepting their role and doing and making the sacrifice. It's not going to be hard for Kevin and for Paul Pierce to make the sacrifice. You also need to understand this. I can bet you that Jason Kidd is going to coach from the perspective of he's still, don't get me wrong, he's going to be a coach and he's going to hold them responsible, but he's going to talk to them and coach them from their, what better way to have a coach than somebody who's been in your shoes? So I'm not saying it's going to be easy, it's going to be great, it's going to be fantastic. What I'm trying to show you is that what you're saying, your concerns are valid, but I'm showing you the other side is saying that, okay, you know, if you've been a player, you can coach a player, if they're mature enough, as a Jason Kidd, you're gonna coach guys from their perspective. He knows what they go through. He knows what it's like to be in there. He knows what game sevens are like, game sixes. He has the memories. He knows. So when he goes to talk to a Kevin Garnett, Kevin Garnett's not going to tell him, man, get out of my face, man. I don't know what you're talking about. You get what I'm saying? It's not the same as a coach who comes across. So what I'm saying is, and plus, Darren Williams? I think it's
Darren Williams,
that they had a very close relationship. So as your point guard goes, if you got your point guard being your leader, and that's what you want. Listen, they just like they got through with Rajon Rondo. Rondo was the same guy. Rondo was aggressive. He directed them. He was tough on them. They listened to him. They went along with him. Yeah, they got back at him sometime, and they were trying to mature him, but still. So you got a Joe Johnson who's going to look to those guys and say, what should I be doing? You got a Garnett who's going to take him under his wing and say, hey, man, look, it's best that you get me here. So I'm just – what I'm trying to say to you is that I think it's a great mix of – it is an absolutely great mix of it's a great mix of what do you call it, of old and young. And it's going to be better for them. They're going to last longer in the season. And all the weight now is not on them. It's on them, but it's not like, okay, how Garnett and Pierce go to Brooklyn next. Because you still got young talent on that team. And then here's the crazy part. You still got Jason Terry who comes off the bench who now doesn't have to carry a team. He can come in off the bench and hit threes. He can come off the bench and just strictly rely on score. Score and play defense and give a spell to one of the guards, to Joe Johnson. So I'm just saying on paper I understand your concerns. Don't get me wrong, because that's what the regular season is for. The regular season is for you to work out all the kinks. The regular season is really to get ready for the playoffs. That's really what a season is. So once they work everything out and everything, we'll see how it happens. Now, you know, and that's what I think in essence. So, you know, as far as the draft, it was, you know, I watched it up until about my Pistons pick. I liked who they picked. I watched maybe like two or three picks after that, then I got off. I didn't even watch the rest of it because, at that point, I was just like, I'm done. I don't really care who anybody gets anymore.
Pick eight. Kentavious Caldwell-Pope. Tell me about this shooting guard.
Don't tell me. I don't know anything about him, but I know from what they told me, the guy can shoot. And I know one thing we need is freaking scoring. So, I mean, I liked him. He's 6'7", 6'8", and he can shoot. I mean, from Georgia, they said he's very high percent. He made a very high percentage of his shots. And that's what they told me. They say he plays both ends. So
20 points per game, five assists per game, and six steals.
Yeah,
is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I mean, like I said, we'll see what happens. But the draft was just ho hum for me. It wasn't that bad. I do want to bring up the fact that I know there's a fight coming in September 14th, and that's Canelo Alvarez and Mayweather. I predict Mayweather to have another easy night. People seem to think now that, you know, Canelo can beat Mayweather, and I just don't know what boxing matches these people watch. But I am a student of boxing. I watch a lot of boxing. I DVR boxing, and I go back and I watch it. Canelo Alvarez is tailor-made for Mayweather.
Okay.
He is a straight-up fighter. He's a straight-ahead fighter. He's flat-footed. He doesn't move well. He beats opponents that stand in front of him. He'll beat your brains out. But Mayweather, as we know, and as I've said, and I said this before, what we saw the other night, the other fight with Guerrero, if he fights that way the rest of these next five fights, nobody's beating Mayweather. Because Mayweather won't stand still. He's going to make you suffer. He's going to pot shot you and hit you when he wants, and then he's going to give you nothing. Or he'll give you very little.
Mm-hmm.
The only hope anybody has to beat Mayweather is you're going to have to catch him with a good shot, Shane Mosley caught him with a good one. You're going to have to catch him with something he didn't see, and Mayweather just ain't that type of fighter, you know. And Canelo Alvarez, if anybody's watched any of his fights, should know Canelo Alvarez is a straight ahead fighter. He comes straight at you. He'll beat you up if you stand in front of him. He's a big guy. Don't get me wrong. But if anybody thinks that Mayweather's going to stand toe-to-toe with this guy and stand in front of him, he's not going to do it. He didn't do it with Guerrero. His father's back in his corner and put him on movement. And all he's gonna, I'm telling you right now, he can't get him. You can't get a guy with body shots. You can't get a guy with the head if he's moving. And Mayweather is a master at taking every time you swing or every time you're thinking about swinging, he gets your timing down and he punishes you. He's a counterpuncher, a master counterpuncher. And so for me, I don't see this fight. I don't see this fight as a win for Canelo. I think he'll do well and he'll show himself okay. But as I said, everybody forgets the guy that he just beat. The guy that he just beat went 7 years and was undefeated.
Mm-hmm.
Like, hadn't lost a fight in like years, not months, years, not days and weeks, years.
Right.
And everybody he beat, he was beating the crap out of. And Mayweather made the guy look ordinary and made him look like, and dude wouldn't even let his hands go because he was so afraid of getting pot shot and counterpunched. And I don't see Canelo Alvarez, and everybody keeps still talking about this pressure. You know, and I just don't see it happening. So they did come out, and I don't know if you heard this, but they have already broken the live gate record. They sold the tickets for it and did $19 million in 24 hours.
Are you serious?
Yep. They so the tickets went on sale, broke the record already. They haven't broken the all-time one, which is where they broke the record of him and what's his name? Oscar De La Hoya.
Mm-hmm.
They broke that record. Him and Canelo broke that record. So, let me read you this quick excerpt about what a writer wrote about Canelo. Canelo will have problems landing body shots against Mayweather. Okay? Junior middleweight Canelo Alvarez has already given away one of his main strategies to try to beat undefeated Floyd Mayweather. It's to focus on landing body shots to try to weaken Mayweather for later rounds. Okay, he don't stand still, so. But anyway, Canelo and his team must figure that it'll be next to impossible to land headshots against Mayweather if they make the effort to try to that approach. We just saw what happened to Robert the Ghost Guerrero last time when he tried to hit Mayweather with body shots for 12 rounds. Guerrero failed miserably and ended up missing countless punches. For some reason, Guerrero didn't adapt his strategy to switch to throwing body shots. Guerrero did not try to throw body shots, but when he would dip his head to go to the body, Mayweather would nail him with straight rights or left hooks and put him off his game. If Canelo commits to the body a lot more than Guerrero does, and he really sets his feet squarely when he throws his body shot, Canelo absolutely needs Mayweather to stand in front of him for him to land body punches because he won't be able to get the job done with Mayweather moving around. See, that's what I was trying to tell you. Like Guerrero, if Canelo lowers his head to throw a shot to the body, he's going to get nailed by Mayweather's faster shots again and again.
Sure.
The problem with body punchers like Canelo is that they can fight this way against fighters that are stationary long enough for them to throw body shots. Guys like Canelo can't land their body shots against a modern fighter that moves, which is probably why Canelo rarely threw shots against Austin Trout. So basically, in short, he's not going to do anything with Mayweather. I think he'll get his shots in, he'll try, but I think Mayweather's going to have a very easy night. He's going to go dance around him, bust him up, and, you know, I just think it's going to be an easy fight. I mean, that's just what I think.
And I think you're right because there's a pattern. There's a distinct pattern to what Mr. Mayweather is doing. He's getting all these Hispanic fighters that basically, for the most part, have the same style.
Mm-hmm.
That they come at you, they stand right in front of you, and they come at you. And they're like easy targets to hit. I mean, and I'm not taking anything away from Floyd, because these are the top contenders. But these guys, and it seems like a lot of Hispanic guys have the same machismo about coming straight ahead and not doing anything fancy. Hit me, I'm going to come at you and keep coming at you. You just don't have to keep on hitting me. And
and the one thing they can't. But here's the one thing they can't say, and this I just want to bring this point out. Is that not only is he picking these guys, but like you said, they're top contenders. But here's the thing. People want him. The fans want him to fight them. So it's not as if – so just as they said, well, oh, man, he ducks and he does this. I'm like, dude, you know, Alvarez is tailor-made for him. My thing to the fans and the people who keep saying this is that, well, who y'all going to find next? You keep running from one fighter to the other to think who this is the guy who can beat Mayweather. Okay, put him in. He'll beat him. And I'm like, dude, you guys, fans, a lot of these boxing fans, a lot of these people who like boxing are casual boxers. They really don't study it and look at it. They don't look at what are they doing, how are they swinging, what do they usually do? Are they counter punchers? Are they straight ahead punch? They don't look at that. All they look at is, ooh, Saul is so big and he can punch hard and he'll get Mayweather. And I'm like, but you're not understanding. If a guy is standing, we already got, look, who was the last guy we saw like a Mayweather? The closest thing I ever saw to Mayweather was probably Sugar Ray Leonard, because he could hit you and then he could move. And we watched his whole career, and that's what he did. He would punish you, and he would have, remember who he beat? Who did he beat that everybody thought he was going to get massacred?
Chavez.
No. Chavez was one, but and he frustrated him because of the movement and because he was hitting him and he couldn't hit him. But who was
right.
the guy who everybody really thought was going to massacre him and he beat him?
I'm trying to think.
Do you remember?
Else? No.
Middleweight champion.
Oh.
Marvin Hagler.
Oh, yes.
And everybody thought, remember, everybody said, oh, you're going to get your head knocked off. He's going to kill you. Because remember,
Marvin just like to come straight ahead.
Right. But I'm just saying, remember, Marvin dominated, held the championship for like 11 years. So, I mean, I could understand why they thought that. But I knew, I was like, dude, if he's on his bike, you can't hit what you can't reach.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why I said when I saw Mayweather coming up through the ranks, I knew he was going to be special because I was like, this guy moves. He don't stand in front. He gets out the way and makes you miss and makes a fool of you. That's a problem. So, like I said, we both agree, you know, Mayweather is special. And like I said, like I've always said, him, Tiger Woods, I can't remember who the other person is, but I know him, Tiger Woods, and other special athletes. These are the guys who we need to appreciate because when they're gone, I don't think we'll see another one like them.
Well,
I don't think we'll ever see another Mayweather, and I don't think we'll ever see another Tiger Woods.
Well,
I
got one for you. I got one for you, and I've been thinking about this ever since last weekend when a certain fighter moved up in weight class to capture, I think he captured his third title or whatever, because
mm-hmm.
he kept on moving in weight class. Talking about Andre Broner, who moved
mm-hmm.
up to welterweight and
mm-hmm.
beat this last guy. I forget his name off
mm-hmm.
the top of my head.
You talk about Paulie Malignaggi.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my question is this, and I'm just speculating. Floyd's
mm-hmm.
got a few more fights left in him before he's going to call it a career.
Mm-hmm.
Broner just moved up to 147,
mm-hmm.
and he'd got the same – I shouldn't say the same. I can't classify him with Floyd, but he's got the same braggadocio.
That defense, right, and the defense, like he plays that defense.
Like Floyd.
Right, like Floyd, yeah.
What's to stop, since he just fought at 147, and
mm-hmm.
Floyd's comfortable weight is at 140, welterweight, 147,
mm-hmm.
give or take,
mm-hmm.
of them meeting in the ring before Floyd decides to hang him up?
Won't happen. They've already said it. Won't happen.
Won't happen.
No, Floyd said that's his little brother. He doesn't
okay.
care because Broner's willing to wait because he knows he has five more fights, he's gone. So
mm-hmm.
all Broner's going to do is keep fighting, and his plan is to take over boxing.
Okay. No
and
problem.
And him and Floyd are real close.
I'm...
They cool. They won't fight. And I knew that. I kind of knew that down the line. I thought they might when Broner first started really getting the notoriety. But then, when I saw them hanging out together, and he was like, "This is my little brother," you know, I'm mentoring him and this and that. Then I knew, I was like, "Oh, they're not gonna fight." And he doesn't feel threatened by Floyd because he knows this is the end. This Floyd's nearing the end of his career, so Floyd's not standing in his way. Floyd's more or less getting. He just looks at it as Floyd's finishing up his work before he gets out the way, and then Broner's like, "I'll take over the joint." Now,
okay.
do I think Broner is good as Mayweather? No.
No.
Here's the crazy part. I believe Broner would be as good as Mayweather or better if he learns to move like Mayweather. The footwork, the movement, to get
okay.
out of the way. Right now he has a great defense. But he stands in front of you with that defense. He doesn't move. He's got to learn to move. and get out the way. He's got to learn. He's got to pick up all of Mayweather's style. What I mean by that is hit me and then get out the way.
Mm-hmm.
Hit and get out the way. Escape. If he does that, Burns going to be hard to beat because his hand speed, just like a young Floyd Mayweather, the defense, just like a young Floyd Mayweather, he's got all the tools. But what I'm anxious to see is he going to get beat first before he learns the footwork thing and then gets it, or is he going to be one of those guys who's not going to lose and just he's going to, you know, go up? Because right now, like I said, I don't even know if Brona's going to stay up at that weight. You know, I don't know if he's going to stay at that weight or not. Could be, could not. Could go back down and dominate. I mean, if I were Brona at 22, I'd go back down and dominate.
Mm-hmm.
And then move up. And then make my move once I see who's up there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because you got a lot of good guys up there. Do I think he could? Now I can tell you one person I don't think he could be is I don't think he'd be Alvarez because he stands still. And I think Alvarez will punish him. But he has the hand speed to offset that a little bit. But, you know, like I said, Broner's going to be fine. You know, I think everybody blew the whole comment he said at the end of the fight way out of proportion. I mean, trash talk is trash talk. It's not like he said something about his dying mother or something like that. It is what it is. And, you know, I thought everybody just made me laugh. And, you know my stance on trash talk. I mean, Muhammad Ali started it. And, I mean, nobody criticizes him. And they said, yeah, well, he didn't say it.
Mm-hmm.
So what? It doesn't matter what he said. Fact is, this guy went into people's, like I said, he went into people's, you know, when you walk into somebody's training camp, that's pretty personal. And walking
mm-hmm.
to the rail while you're doing broad, I mean, that's pretty there. No, it's not nasty. It's not derogatory, but it's still trash talk. So I think people just need to back off and just realize that boxing is boxing. It is what it is. It's not a tea and crumpet sport. It's not a professional sport. So it is what
it is. Let me ask you this.
Mm-hmm.
You watch a lot of boxing. I assume you watch the Broner fight.
Mm-hmm.
And did you see the after fight interviews in the ring?
Yeah, I saw it.
Besides Broner, I mean, the other fighter, Paulie, pretty much said that,
mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say he said the fight was fixed, but he said the outcome was a foregone conclusion because
if you're well connected.
Broner, exactly.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts about
that?
That?
I believe that.
Yeah?
Yeah, I believe that.
Okay.
I believe if you're well connected, you're a well connected fighter, you're going to get a more favorable judge than it. I mean, put it like this. If a Floyd Mayweather gets knocked down 2-3 times in a fight, unless he's punch drunk, like absolutely just bleeding and whatever, they're not going to stop that fight. If he stops and he gives a good showing, he could possibly win a fight. Because with those kind of guys, there are certain guys that you're not going to deduct points. You're not gonna. If you know, Floyd could go through all night, throw right and left hand jabs all night. Never put a combination together. And at the end of the fight, he would win. If the other guy hasn't really whooped him, you kind of get what I'm saying.
Sure, I understand.
So here's my point. Paulie says that, but at the same time, the way I looked at the fight was this. You got to remember something. Boxing judges look at boxing all the time.
Sure.
They're not going to give you points for pity-patting a guy up and down his body while he stands in a defensive stance. They're just not going to give you the same punch. Now, when Broner answered back and decided to let his hands go, he was hitting him upside the head and his face. He was punishing him. Whereas when Paulie was hitting him with 2, 3, 4, 5 combinations, they looked and sounded good, but they were off the shoulder, off the arm, off the back. And he's standing there looking at him like, okay, is that all you got? And then he comes back and hits him. So what Paulie thought he could do was, I'll be the busier fighter. His plan was, I'll be the busier fighter. I'll hit him with a whole bunch of punches, and I'll point him. You can't do that against a guy like Broner, not an up-and-coming guy. And you're with Al Haymon, who runs boxing damn near. You can't. You just can't. Like I said, you just can't. You can't do that. You're not going to
okay.
win a fight like that. Paulie was a big name and a marquee guy, but he's not anymore. He's on the downside. So he's not going to get that call against a 22 up-and-coming guy who is the next big moneymaker They're not going to do that. So was he right about what he said? To an extent, yeah. I believe there's well-connected fighters that get favorable calls and favorable judging. I believe that. You'd be stupid not to believe it. I mean, boxing is not the cleanest sport in the world. Trust me. You know. But
well, speaking of boxing, I got somebody here, Slack, that I'm going to bring him in here. And I think he's going to talk to you about your friend, Floyd Mayweather, because he was at the presser that was in D.C.
Oh, yeah, Black was there. Yeah, Black was texting me.
Black, welcome, Black. How you doing, my man?
Hey, what's going on, fellas?
What's up, Black?
Right.
What's going on, man? I heard y'all was talking about some Malinazzi and Bomber.
Right.
Yeah, Malinazzi and the Bomber, yeah. And Broner, yeah.
I can't believe he was complaining after he was just landing all those shots on the defense, man. Right. That's not going to score that for you. Right. Exactly.
And that's what I was just telling. And that's what I was just telling. As I was just telling Jerry, I was like, Jerry, you know, Paulie's fight plan was weak. Paulie knew he couldn't go toe to toe with Broner, but he figured I'd just hit him and be the busier fighter, and I'd just outpoint him. And it's like, yeah, but you can't outpoint him if you're not doing power punches, you're not going to win that fight. And the difference is that Paulie was pity padding. Broner was doing more power shots than he did. He was throwing shots to the face, the head, off his jaw, off his chin. You saw that man's head going back like a rooster. I mean, because he colored his hair like a rooster, but he was just busting them all up in his face. So, I mean, that's the matter of fact. And then for Paulie to get mad about it, he was like, I don't even mind if he lost a close fight, but he was talking about the one score from the one judge. I didn't think it was outrageous that judge had that, because I didn't really think that Paulie, I thought far and away Broner won. I mean, you know, that's just me. But, you know, I knew Paulie was going to win.
I'm in agreement with you because a lot of that stuff sounded good, but it wasn't really landing.
Right. Exactly. He was just hitting off the defense. He was hitting them all, like, shoulder, back, arm, and people were going like, woo! And I was like, yeah, but that's all that's fan. He's in Brooklyn. What did you think was going to happen? But,
right.
You know, but he has, but Paulie doesn't have any power, you know, and Paulie doesn't have, he didn't have any power at all. And, you know, he took, I give it to him, he took Adrian's power pretty good, you know, and came out pretty much unscathed. But at the same time, you know, he didn't hit any power shots. And it's just, you know, it was terrible. So that's where I am with that. But I wanted to bring up, one thing I wanted to bring up was, I said boxing, the NBA. Oh, I'm going to save this last one for the last few minutes. So I wanted to weigh in on the Zimmerman trial. I did tell Victor I was going to talk about it. I just want to know what you guys' thoughts are on it. Yeah, I heard you. Yeah, oh boy. But I mean, I wanted to know what you.
Because I've seen your comments on Facebook, so I'm listening to you. Go ahead.
Well, no, I'm just asking what you guys weighed in. But I mean, you already pretty much know where I am. My whole thing is I just want to see the evidence, and that's why I didn't. One thing I didn't do is when this first started and everybody was posting pictures of Yoo-Hoo, Skittles, hoodies, people in hoodies, and this and that, and jumped to conclusions, I left it because I was like, when the court case comes, we're going to find out. And, you know, from what I'm seeing so far, it happened like what he said, which I kind of believed him. And I just saw his film a couple of days ago that they released, the reenactment. And I believe it happened that way. But that's not to say that Trayvon was a bad kid, you know. But I just think, and I tell you why I think. But you can go ahead and say what you got to say, Jerry. I mean, I just think me myself. I think he was a kid who was pissed off because he thought the guy was trying to follow him or whatever. I understand that. But here's the thing. But the witnesses that I've heard so far have corroborated what he said in the reenactment, which when they said, are you following him? He said, yeah. And they said, don't. He said, okay. If I'm going back to my truck and I say I don't see him and I'm going back to my truck, because they just told me not to follow him. I go back to my truck, and he told the police to bring me that he's not following him anymore. So then he comes out and catches him and says, "You got a problem?" He says, "No, what are you talking about? I don't have a problem with you." He looks down for his thing, and then he punches him in the face. Do I believe all that happened? Sure, absolutely. Does that make Trayvon a bad guy? No. But I just think that's what happened. And do I think he reached down for his gun? Absolutely. You beating the crap out of somebody and you got on top of them, beating them in the face, and you're putting their head on the cement. I'm just saying, when all this came out, when all this comes out, as I saw today, the people are corroborating what the man said in his own thing the day after or 2 days after. So for me, you know, I hate to say it, but I kind of figured this is what happened. I kind of figured. He's not going anywhere. I mean, it's not second degree. It's not second degree. It's not. It's not second to me.
He was following. He was a guy who was following a black kid because he saw a black kid, and the black kid was minding his own business, wasn't doing anything suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
He was following because the guy was black and was wearing a hoodie. Come on, man.
But I don't,
come on.
But Jerry, I find it hard to believe that this man said, "You know what? I'm gonna go ahead and shoot me a Negro today." Because
what?
The thing,
are you
go
kidding
ahead
me?
That's being done every single day.
By law enforcement and non-law enforcement. So what are you talking about?
Wait a minute. I said him. I didn't say everybody. I said I find it hard to believe he. In this situation, the way it's explained and the way it's coming across, I don't think this man purposely set out to kill a black man, to kill that boy.
He had no reservations about it. I tell you that, in my opinion.
But,
he had no reservations about it.
Okay, but let me ask you a question. Let me ask you this. Have you grown up around guns?
Excuse me?
I'm talking about in your house. And you're a shooter, and you've grown up, you've gone to the range, you do all that stuff. I'm asking.
No.
Okay. So for a person like me, you, and other people who didn't grow up around this, it would be a traumatic thing for us because we've never done that before. I know guys who are policemen who legally carry a gun who have no trepidation about that. If you're a guy who goes to the range, you shoot guns all the time, you're not afraid of guns. You don't think of shooting as a traumatic thing. So I understood why I did. My sister has a gun. She goes to the range with her and her husband. They go shoot guns. And, you know, if they shot somebody, they wouldn't be fazed. They wouldn't be sitting around going like, "Oh, my God, I just killed somebody." They wouldn't, because it doesn't scare them. So by George Zimmerman, I wasn't surprised when they said George Zimmerman was the guy said, well, he was calm, he's a collected. They're making it like, okay, he was a cold, calculated killer. I'm like, no, he just was comfortable with guns. It wasn't – he knew how to use his firearm. I'm pretty sure if you're carrying it on your hip, you know how to use it. You go to the range, you know how to holster it, you know how to clean it. You know that stuff usually. Okay, especially if you have a license to do it.
So you telling me, a guy with a gun that's used to being around a gun, used to shooting a gun, whether it's on a range or whatever, in the military, whatever, can't be a cold, calculated killer? Because that's what you're telling me.
No. I was speaking to the point where the guy, where the prosecution was trying to talk today, and they're trying to ask the question. The line of question was about his reaction after. And I was saying that the reason why he was calm about it was not because he was a – I'm saying it wasn't necessarily that. But most people, if he was an ordinary Joe Blow citizen, had a gun and never had a gun, let's say he picked it up and he shot somebody, it would be a traumatic experience. But
well,
to a person who already has a gun, that's not a traumatic experience. That's why they're calm.
It's a traumatic experience if you shoot a living person, a living body, versus shooting a stationary, non-living target. Anybody,
true.
In my opinion, anybody with any kind of compassion or any kind of feelings, when they shoot a human being, got to feel something, unless
right.
they're a cold, calculated killer. Now,
right.
if you
I understand
cop,
that, but I was just saying, but they were trying to say it like, but you know, Jerry, and I know this for a fact because, like I said, I have cops as friends. If you shoot somebody, of course you don't want to shoot anybody. Of course you don't. I mean, when black
I don't know
when,
about that.
No, what I'm saying is no. What I'm trying to, you're not getting what I'm saying. What I'm trying to say to you, Jerry, is that if I'm around, all I'm trying to say is if I'm used to shooting guns, a policeman is not going to be traumatic as a person who's never had a gun, never killed anybody before. You get a 20-year policeman who's had to shoot people and been in certain situations, they're not going to throw up. They're not going to fall out. They're not going to be shaking. They're not going to put the gun down and go out into shakes and stuff, what I'm saying.
But oh, you don't know that.
Never right. So what I'm saying to you is, all I was saying to you is that they were pointing today to Jim Zimmerman. They were trying to put it like Zimmerman was all calm. And I was saying he was calm 9 times out of 10, because I know guys who've done it who are calm. That doesn't mean they have no feeling. That doesn't mean they didn't want to shoot the guy, but they don't react the way a person who's never shot or never held a gun before and shoot somebody. It's more traumatic when you're not used to it. You haven't grown up around that. You're not used to that. People who hunt and have guns and clean guns and around guns, they're not scared of guns. A person who never had that is going to be scared of guns. If they shoot the gun, they're going to be nervous. If they kill somebody, they're going to be, oh, man, they're done.
Unless you're a cold, calculated killer, and regardless if you've been around guns or not. So you've been around guns, you've been shooting guns and whatever. Even go out and you hunt game,
mm-hmm.
okay?
Mm-hmm.
So you shooting
mm-hmm.
guns, you used to shooting an animal or whatever. That's a
mm-hmm.
totally different.
Absolutely.
Than shooting a human being. Totally different.
I agree with that.
And if you're calm and cool and collected
mm-hmm.
after
mm-hmm.
shooting a human being,
mm-hmm.
there's something wrong. There's something wrong
okay.
there because
then there's something wrong with policemen. There's something
oh,
wrong
no,
with
no.
military people.
Policemen go through psychological things after a shooting, especially if it involves shooting somebody. Because
Absolutely.
The fact is, it's a stressful and a mental thing
go through a lot of training. Which a legal gun owner goes through also.
Yeah, but a legal gun owner,
and
that's different. That's different. A legal gun owner doesn't go through the type of training a policeman goes through, because a policeman goes through training that molds his mind in a mental state that he won't hesitate when another
mm-hmm.
fellow human being is pointing a gun at him.
So you're saying you don't go through that
totally
same
different.
Thing when you go to – so you're saying – wait a minute. So you're saying – the training program that they go through, a gun course, and then they go to the range, and all the training they go through, you're telling me it's not, is the policeman is just a little bit, I might agree with you that it's a little bit more, but you're saying that it's totally different?
It's different.
I don't
think so. Absolutely different. They're being trained as professionals to be able to shoot without hesitation another person that's threatening their life or someone else's life. That's a given. Everyday person that owns a gun takes it to the range. They're
mm-hmm.
firing at stationary targets.
Mm-hmm.
They're not being trained, regardless. Besides shooting the gun, they're not
mm-hmm.
being trained the way somebody in the military or somebody in law
mm-hmm.
enforcement is being trained to be able to react when the time comes to pull the trigger against somebody.
Right.
They're not being. There's no way that they're being trained. There's no way a civilian is getting trained the same way as somebody from law enforcement, whether it's the FBI, whether it's a local policeman, state police. They get totally different type of training. The whole mindset
right.
is different when they have a gun and they have to pull that gun out against somebody. The whole mindset is different. So when you have a civilian, when someone who's not in the police force or been trained in the police force pull a
right.
gun on somebody and shoots them
right.
and has no emotions, it's cool, calm, and collected, there's a problem there. There's
right.
a serious problem with
yeah.
that individual.
Right, right. Okay. Well, I mean, like I said, I'm going to say this. I guess I say all that to say this, is that George Zimmerman is not going anywhere. It's not second-degree murder. I believe with the reenactment happened the way it is, and the people are bagging it up. And here's my problem. The problem is that, you know, I'm gonna be honest with you. If a guy's on top of me beating the crap out of me, and I gotta get him up off me, I'm gonna do what I gotta do. And it might have been me, and I might have did the same thing. If you're on top of me and you beating the crap out of me, hit me in my nose and bash my head against the thing, and I can't get you up off me, I might have done the same thing. In fact, to be honest with you, I probably would have, once he was up on me and took the first swing at me, I probably would have pulled it out immediately and said, roll out. That's just me. But I mean, like I said, if he wanted to kill him, why didn't he just pull it out and just shoot him right there? When he got up on him, smug him and hit him with the first punch. He tried to fight him and try to get him up off me and call for help. He didn't try to shoot him until he had to. So, you know, like I said, man, my whole thing is, only thing I'm trying to say is that that's why I don't jump to conclusions. And I just think that, you know, we do ourselves a real disservice when we assume something before we see all the facts. That's my point. And somebody got mad at me the other day because they were like, well, he did this and he did this and he did that. And I was like, well, let's wait and see the whole thing first before we just judge somebody and say, well, it was a racial killing. You know, I believe his version. I believe the version that he put out on the film.
But you don't think anything he did wasn't racially motivated? Are you telling me that? You telling me that once he prompted this in the first place, what happened in the beginning of this wasn't racially motivated.
I think it was racially motivated. I think it was racially motivated when Trayvon Martin came to him and swung on him and punched him. Because if I think George Zimmerman was a black man, I don't think that would have happened.
Let me put it this way. Now, this guy, this kid's 14 years old, 13, whatever age he was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
All right, you got some guy following him. All right, kid's immature. He's aggravated, and his guy's
right.
following him. Leave me alone.
Right.
I'm not doing nothing. I'm not bothering
right.
you. But
right.
even if it was a black man or this George Zimmerman, because he's a black kid with a hoodie and supposedly in a place where he shouldn't be, he's
mm-hmm.
going to follow him. He's not doing anything. He's not bothering
mm-hmm.
anybody. He's not doing anything suspicious.
Mm-hmm.
But because he's a black kid with a hoodie, he's going to follow him, regardless if it's George, this guy Zimmerman or if it was a black man. And this kid, just like any other teenager, is
mm-hmm.
going to get aggravated
mm-hmm.
because the guy,
mm-hmm.
look, I'm not bothering anybody. Why are you following me? Leave me alone. What's up with you? He's going to come back at him just like that because he's a teenager, and he, for lack of a better word, he's keeping it real. Like, I'm not doing anything. I'm not bothering anybody. I'm minding
right.
my own business. Why don't
right.
you mind your own business? And
absolutely.
I think the kid would have done that whether it was a black man or whether it was a Zimmerman. I think he would have done it either way because that's how teenagers are. That's how
right.
teenagers are.
Right. But I also know that I've been, give you an example. I've been in a gym with all black guys playing basketball. Give you an example.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's
mm-hmm.
in there calling fouls, get mad, F you, F this, F that. Ain't nobody swinging off. Ain't nobody hitting nobody. Ain't nobody
but
trying
but
to fight. Everybody,
yeah,
well, just listen to what I'm saying. I'm giving you an example.
Okay.
I'm giving you an
okay.
example.
I'm listening.
But then a few weeks later, black guys bring to the gym the next week a white guy with them, or a couple of them. Now, all of a sudden, it's not just F you, F this, F that. Now it's, man, so-and-so and so-and-so, white boy, you be blah, 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 and then they start trying to chump them. And I noticed that they changed. But you wasn't doing that to us, when all of us were in there, when we was all in there together, because you ain't really want that wreck like that. Unless something went like that, you didn't want to. I've seen so many examples, and you got to realize I've also been in a high school. That's where I work. I've seen the same thing in high schools where a teenager won't go back at one dude, won't go back at the same black dude because they know, well, I ain't really trying to get that wreck, so I'm gonna just cuss and get mad. But then if it's a white boy, now all of a sudden you brave. Now all of a sudden you take it on. Now all of a sudden I walk up and punch you in the face, and he'd be like, well, why you ain't walk up and punch the other kid who called you a bitch last week? Why you punch the white kid in the face, you feel brave. So you feel like the white boy weaker, so you feel like you'll walk up and just punch him in the face and just do it. And to be honest with you, that's honestly what I think happened. I think he thought I could whoop him his ass, and he did it. And like I said, here's my point. Do I think that George Zimmerman was in the wrong place at the wrong time? Absolutely.
I can't believe you said that. I can't believe you said that.
He was.
Wait a minute. Trayvon is the one that got shot, so he's in the wrong place at the wrong time.
You're not letting me finish. But, Jerry, you're not letting me finish what I said. I wasn't saying it like poor George Zimmerman. What I was saying, he was in the wrong place at the wrong time. He shouldn't have been there. He should have went on and stayed in his car probably, had the cops come and let them handle it. But he did call the cops. He was on with them to call them. He just happened to come back at the wrong time. He was aggravated. He said what he said. And to be honest with you, what Trayvon probably should have done, which nobody will say this, is probably should have said, why are you following me? I don't know what you're talking about. I'm not following you. You got a problem? No, I don't have a problem. And then when he goes for his phone, he walks up to him and says, well, you got a problem now. So what that tells me, this is what that tells me. That tells me, at that point, he had an opportunity to say, I enroll and leave the scene and go on where he was going and let it go. The guy said, I ain't got no problem with you. And he could have left. Why didn't he? So I'm not saying it's Trayvon's fault he got shot, but at the same time, you can't excuse the fact that he had an opportunity to let it go and he didn't. You can't excuse the fact that he was on top of George Zimmerman beating the shit out of him. And what do you expect a man to do? Just stand there and get his ass beat
and not do nothing? Just,
wait a minute, because if it's true what he said, here's the thing. If it's true what he said, here's what I'm going to preface this. If it's true what he said and he's whooping him, and then he tries to wiggle to put his head off the ground because he's busting his head on the back, which we see the marks on the head from the cement. If he's trying to wiggle and he sees the gun and cuts him down and says, and then reaches past him and reaches for the gun. If it's true what Zimmerman said, Zimmerman had every right to defend himself to do it. So all I'm saying to you is that, but at the same time, he was getting his head beat in. I can tell you this. Y'all say if, but let me tell you something. There ain't no way in the hell you can sit there and look at that boy's nose broken and look at that thing and tell me that man was sitting there and just took all that beating like that. That man was on top of him. Them people said that today, that he was on top of him. In the court, they said it today. The guy said, the neighbor said he was on top of him. And he was punching him. He said it looked like punching, but his arms was moving. That's what he said. So all I'm saying to you is this, is that if he was getting, all I'm telling you is this, if George Zimmerman was getting his ass whooped, he had every right to defend himself. And he was in a position where he couldn't do anything. The boy straddled on top of him. You can't get him up off you. What is he supposed to do? Just take the beating? Nah, I'm not going to pull out the gun. Because if that's the case, he could have pulled the gun out when he first saw the dude. If he just wanted to kill a black dude, he could have just shot him when he first punched him. Why didn't he? Why he tried to fight him and get him up off of it? Why he said
I haven't been following it that closely, but I have a question for both of you guys. And I was shocked to see it. And I wanted to get you guys' opinion. I'm the following it closely because I've been checking out the Hernandez thing. But
right.
I was going through my Facebook posts, and I actually saw a picture of his dead body on Facebook. Now, they showed the dead body on TV. They've never shown a homicide victim lifeless body on TV until now. I'm trying to figure out why that happened.
I have no idea.
I have no idea, Black.
I have no idea. I can honestly tell you. I saw it, too. And I didn't know why, but maybe it's part of the evidence or part. I don't. You know, when a court case is,
they never show bodies on TV.
No, But I'm saying I don't understand. I don't know. I can't tell you. If I said it, I'd be lying. I don't know why. I don't know why they did it either. I didn't even really ask myself that because I kind of went down and kind of saw it, but then I kind of kept going because I was like, man, I ain't giving that no time. You know, I just kept going. You know.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, here's my thing. All I'm saying to you is this, Jerry. Jerry, what I'm saying is that it's unfortunate that both were involved in the whole thing. And I just wish, honestly, that Trayvon had just said what he had to say and rolled out and said, all right, man, leave me alone, rolled out and went on because he had that opportunity. But if he punched Zimmerman in the face, which I believe he did, and if they started fighting and he got on top of him and started punching him in the face and it happened the way Zimmerman said, I mean, what do you expect? Everybody's not going to stand there and take an ass.
My question is this, man. Mm-hmm. Why is it? Because this is irritating me a little bit. Why is it that anytime an African American has a problem, that you side with the person that's opposite the African American? Why
because,
is that?
I'll tell you why.
Why
because
is that?
Because I don't side with anybody. I side with the truth because I'm real about my own people and I'm real about myself. I know what I would do. I see the stuff all the time. I see that stuff. I see a black guy chomp a white guy where he just an hour or two ago got cussed out by the dude over here. He ain't trying to see that rat. But this guy over here says one wrong word, he punches him in the face. What I'm trying to say, my main thing with this whole thing is that's why I never posted anything on the Trayvon Martin thing until the court case. That's why I never said anything. If you go back on my page, I've never said anything. I haven't sided with anybody, but I know how we are, and I'm not going to join in the whole. I'm not a person. Let me say this to you, Jerry. I'm not a person who runs around looking for race. I don't run around looking for the problem. I don't think that every white person who follows me when I'm in a store is following me because I'm black. I'm gonna tell you why. Because I worked in retail, and I follow somebody white because we've had a rash of robberies in the store of shoplifting, and I've had to follow everybody. Or I pick the people that look suspicious and I go and follow them. I follow black and white. So my thing is, I understand where it's coming from. So I understand that. I'm just a person, and I'm going to be honest with you. I didn't grow up with my mother preaching to me about finding everything. Everything in my life is not about something. I think it's a sad state when some African Americans and some of my friends are like that. Everything is about race. They see everything black and white, and I can't do that. Because if I live black and white, I miss opportunities and I miss things in life and I'll be miserable. Because I have friends who literally every time, if it has anything to do with a white person, it's got to be race. And I'm like, why does it have to be race? You also have to understand that I was raised by a white man. When my father wasn't around, I was raised by a white man who was a priest, who I saw the pictures of marching with Martin Luther King at places for black civil rights and things like that. And he taught me to see things, take everybody on their character, stop living in suspicion. I can't do that. So what I'm saying is I'm a person who's willing to see the facts. Give me the facts. Let me see the facts. I don't jump to conclusions because everybody else, because let's be honest, most of the people who jumped on the Trayvon Martin bandwagon when it first happened didn't even know the facts. And they already made up their mind it's a racial thing. He was a racist, he killed him, he shot him in cold blood. Nobody saw the evidence, nobody looked at anything, nobody saw nothing. Immediately, that's just how it took off. I'm not that type of person.
To give that point some light, some more light, is this. Most of those people who said that, and I hate to put a blanket statement, were probably black. But on the other end of that spectrum, most of the people who said he was in, why was he in that neighborhood? Why did he have to wear a hoodie? He must have been doing something suspicious. They were white. So,
right.
So when you say that, listen to what I just said.
Mm-hmm.
That it, two different perspectives from
right.
two different races about the same situation.
Mm-hmm.
Of things, especially things like this, is about race. It ain't about who's on who. It's about race. And the fact is that there's a perception that he's in the wrong place. He shouldn't be here because he's not the right color to be in this place.
But that's the point. My problem with us is that sometimes we just make this. We are too quick to label if a black, I guess what I'm trying to say is this. If a black guy shoots a black guy, we don't like it, but we don't get really outraged. But if it's a white guy shooting a black kid, everybody gets outraged. My problem with this is what you're saying is, yes, it's two different perspectives. But here's what I'm trying to say to you. I try to be honest about things. And my honesty I'm just speaking on me. When I say honest, what I mean by that is, I look at things as, what if it was me? What if I had to shoot somebody? What does this circumstance, let me see the facts first before I do that. That's the same thing I've learned as being a Christian. It's not fair to judge somebody and just say, well, immediately, this is what it is. That's stupid.
I agree with that.
Because how many times have black people done things totally innocent? I mean, how many times have you got? I mean, I'll give you a great one. When black people get mad, what do white people say? He was aggressive. He was mean. he was threatening to me. That makes me sick. No, I just got angry at you and I expressed it. I didn't raise my hand to you. I didn't yell and scream at you. I was aggressive. Why? Because I came back at you and I explained to you and broke it down to you and told you that. I've had that happen to me. Do I think that's a racial thing? Sure I do. But I also think, because I think that black people are looked at as animals when we get angry. We're looked at as some inhuman thing. We're going to be aggressive. We're going to hurt you. And that stereotype, I hate that. So don't get it confused and think that I just take white folks' side. I don't. But at the same time, when this happened, I looked at it as, have I seen this before? Yes, I've seen this before. Based on what Zimmerman explained, but I never posted on Facebook until the trial came and the evidence started to come out. See, I wanted to give it a chance to come out. I believed Zimmerman's version from the beginning. But I never spoke on it because I didn't have any evidence to corroborate that. So for me, I did what most black folks didn't do. Shut up and wait till it gets to court, see all the evidence, and then make up your mind. Then make up your opinion. But the funny thing is, most black people that I know who on Facebook or friends of mine have already made up their mind a long time ago. And wait a minute, and they're not looking at the evidence, or they make the excuse to say, "Well, nah, that's not really it. He's lying." And I'm like,
they're not even trying to hear both sides of the story. You got to hear both sides of the story before you can even make a valid judgment.
Jerry, I'm not on anybody's side, Jerry. I'm on the side of let's hear the evidence.
And even
if I believe it, I need to be responsible enough to shut my mouth until I see the evidence. Because let me bring up a name to you. Tawana Brawley. Remember that name?
Oh, yeah. I definitely remember that name.
And how many black people had egg on their face off that one?
Well, the reason I'm saying this is, is the trial still going on, Mac?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, so you just heard something that you wanted to corroborate what you thought was going on, but you haven't heard everything that's been put out there. You just heard something
You're absolutely right.
So there's more to this trial than just what you just heard.
Absolutely, I agree with that. But since I brought it up, I'm going to be responsible enough to say, to then be honest enough to say it, because now is the time when the evidence comes out. I said I believe it. Now, do I say unequivocally that's what happened? That's what I think happened, and based off what the evidence and what the witnesses are saying, it's all lining up to that. Do I think that second-degree murder was too high? Yes, it was. They should have never did second-degree murder. What they should have did was manslaughter. Because you might have got him on manslaughter. Second degree is too harsh. You have to say that he purposely did that, and there's no way to measure that. And everything they've shown so far, and I have an aunt who's a lawyer, and I know other people who are lawyers, who says it doesn't rate. Everything that's presented so far doesn't even touch it. So I'm just saying to you, do I believe the incidents, the reenactment happened the way George Zimmerman said? Yes, I do. Do I believe that, am I going to put Trayvon Martin at fault? I don't put him at fault like, okay, he deserved to die. No. Do I believe he put himself in a position to get killed? Yes. And do I believe that it was right what he did, to just punch the dude in the face and start the whole thing? No. Do I hold Zimmerman and say, well, maybe he shouldn't have followed him? Okay, maybe he shouldn't have followed him. Absolutely right. But at the same time, but both don't have an excuse. He doesn't have an excuse. What I'm saying is, if a guy is, and here's the if, just like you said, the if he reached for his gun and saw it and said, "You're going to die tonight, MF-er," like he said he did, and he was reaching and went past his body for the gun, what was he supposed to do? That's what I ask. But at the same time, let's hold Trayvon Martin responsible and say, you know what, as a teenager, you shouldn't have punched that grown man. Because I'm going to tell you what, Trayvon Martin or some teenager punched me in the face, I'm whooping your ass. I'm going to try to. And tell you what, if you're on top of me and you're whooping my ass and I got a gun, you're done. In fact, I would have pulled it when you first punched me. Now, would I have shot you and killed you? No. Now, I would agree with this. I wouldn't have done that. I would have pulled it out to make you roll.
Like I said,
I wouldn't have done that.
Like I say again, you heard what you thought assumed took place, so you're jumping on that. I understand that, okay?
But that's a witness in a courtroom. That's all I'm saying. That's evidence.
But you just heard whatever amount of testimony. But the trial ain't over yet. So
there's
always another side to the story before
you
draw your complete conclusions. So,
I agree with that. I agree with that, but I don't think it's much more. I don't think it's much more. I think they overcharged him, and that's not nobody else's fault but the prosecutors. I think they overcharged him, and I just think George Zimmerman's not going anywhere.
Well,
he's
let me put it this
anywhere.
Way. You know, it won't be the first or last time that a prosecution botched a murder trial or any kind of criminal trial overcharging or making mistakes to
you know what I really
to think that
yeah,
somebody
right.
may go
that's
free
true.
Or not. So
that's true. But everybody was good with it when OJ got off. Now when the shoe's on the other foot, everybody's gonna be pissed off, mad. I'm gonna have
quit.
A riot. I'm flying to Florida. You know, I'm going to kill someone. Kill me some whitey.
If the glove don't fit, you must quit.
Hey, look, that's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Hey,
I'm
man.
Saying.
Hey, look.
Fair play. Here's my thing. The only thing I do wish is I wish it had happened in daylight. I wish it had never happened in the dark. Because I think if it happened in the daylight, it would have been more clear what happened and how everything went down. I hate the fact that it was in the dark and you have witnesses and people who really couldn't quite see it. But, you know, like I said, this is what I'm saying. I don't take white folks' side because I'm not taking white folks' side. What I'm saying is I look at my life experiences, I look at what I see, and I try to make decisions and say, dude, does that sound for me? Does that sound right? And I say, yeah. But the difference is, like I said, I was responsible with mine, because I sat here, and I remember I told my wife, I said, all these people jumping to conclusions. The lady in the pink hat who's the senator, she's crazy. Trayvon was shot in the street like a dog. And I'm just like, you don't even know what happened. You only know what the media's telling you. And my thing is, is that I think we need to learn as African Americans that everything is not black and white. I can't live. I went 3 hours with one of my friends. I said, I can't live like that. I can't live that every time, you know, a white person doesn't agree with me, it's because I'm black. I can't get behind every time I walk in a store and a white person's following me in a store, it's because I'm black. I can't live like that. Because here's the thing. To be honest with you, I can't go and say, well, the white cop pulled me over because I'm black. No, because most of my friends who hate cops are criminals. They doing something they're not supposed to. I don't have a problem with a cop when he pulls me over. Give him a license, give him registration. Yes, sir, no, sir, yes, sir, no, sir. Boop, I'm gone. Never have a problem. Don't hate cops. You know, so all I'm saying to you is I think we live in a black and white world, and I'm glad I wasn't raised that way. I was raised to look at people individually. You know, I just was taught that way. You know, would I have turned out the way most have, you know, and think that everything is black and white? Yeah, probably if God hadn't put that priest in my life, I probably would have, you know, and so it's not being on the white folks' side. It's just trying to give, I'm trying to put it into words. It's just giving somebody a chance first. Let me find out what you really are first. I'm not going to sit and judge you based on, if you don't agree with me on something, I've never looked at a white person and thought they disagree with me because I was black. Even on political views.
Yeah,
but you've got a lot of us who do
that.
You know, and I'm just saying in life, period, I just can't be, I guess what I want to say is a race baiter. I can't go around doing that. You know, have I had people follow me around? Yeah, but guess what? Follow me to the register because I'm going to buy my shit and I'm going to leave. And I don't care if you follow me. Whereas black folks get irritated, agitated, get mad. I want to see the manager. You don't follow me. For what? For what? You want to watch me buy a pair of Levi's? Great. You want to watch me buy a pair of gym tennis shoes? Great.
Yeah, but see,
you want to follow
Mac,
me too? I don't care though.
But it's not a big deal though. I understand what it is a big deal. But for the simple fact is, you're getting followed simply because of the color of your skin. After a while, when things like that happen over a period of time to you, or a period of time to the same race of people, you get sick and tired of getting sick and tired.
But that's a choice, and again, I agree with you. But that's a choice. How come we can ignore some things and some that happen over and over to us, but some things we don't? It's a choice. I learned a long time ago. My mother taught me some things just ain't a big deal. It just ain't. if somebody followed me through the store. I mean, I remember the first time I was like, they followed me through the store. She was like, okay, you got money? Yeah, I got money. Okay, well, what do you care for? Go buy your stuff and leave. So what? Come back to the store if you want something else. Buy something else. So what? And I just grew up not caring about that stuff. Because in the end, it's nothing. Me getting mad and angry, now I've wasted my energy. I've gotten stressed. I've gotten angry. I fussed at somebody. I did something. So now, guess what? It's not going to change. Because
you're
going to be white people in stores that are going to do it. It's not going to change. Now I will say this to you. Now, if I were a athlete and I was somebody who had influence, big influence, yes, then I'd agree. I'd probably say something because I could probably change, possibly change it. But if I'm Joe Blow from Kokomo and I'm in there buying a pair of jeans and you want to follow me through there, good. Because guess what? Once I buy my jeans and my shoes, I'm good with that. Because guess what? The next time I come in the store, sometimes I come back in the store and the person be like, hey, how you doing, Mac? How you doing? Blue, blue, blue. Don't follow me around no more because they know I got money. I ain't doing nothing. So what? Big deal. It's just, to me, Jerry, it's just a lot of things. And maybe it's my age, but I just, I was taught that way. I just don't stress out about, to me, it's like sweating over small stuff because I can't make that person not follow me. But I also know that necessarily that person may not be following me because I'm black. But because I'm not there all day to see that they're following only black people, I don't know that. So I can't assume that. And I don't want to get hooked into that because be honest with you, I've grown up around a lot of people, a lot. Family, outside of my family, friends, relatives, I've grown up around a lot of people who everything, and I get so, that's the one thing I get sick of. Everything is about white people. Crackers this, crackers that, white folks this. They did it because of this, and they did it because, and I'm sitting in the living room going like, well, y'all shut up. You don't know whether they did it for that or not. Every white person is not a KKK person. Every white person does not hate black people. Come on, you can't do it. You got to wait and get to know people and judge them by who they are. Once you judge, you can't sit and say somebody, because I've been in the position, honestly, Jerry, where people who said they thought that I was mean. Well, people said, I thought, you know, you were an asshole. Or, you know, I thought you were this or that. I've had people who work for me who said that about me. But then I've done something or something, not to show them any kind of way, but I've just been fair about certain things, and they've gone like, you know what, you all right guy. I thought you were this and this. I mean, a white person, like, I thought you was this, and this. But I don't want to be judged that way, so why would I want to judge somebody? I want to find out first. That's my point. I'm a fair person. I try to be. And that's my point. It's not being on white folks' side. It's looking at both sides and being fair about it and saying, is that a realm of possibility that it happened? Yes. Once I see the evidence, I see that. That's why when everybody was doing it, I thought it was stupid because I was like, okay, do y'all remember Tawana Brawley? Yeah, everybody thought the chick was like, yeah, remember that? And you remember Jesse and Sharpton? They still wiping the egg off their face for that. You know what I'm saying?
This is totally different. This is totally different, Max.
No, what I'm saying is we rushed. But no, it's not because black people did the same thing they did with this. They rushed in and said, oh, my God. She got put into a bag with a bunch of comments. Some white people got her out in the woods. And then I remember that. And we did the same thing we doing with this. As soon as we heard the story, we jumped on it and ran with it. Oh, somebody going to do something about this. I know we did it then, too. Go look at the story. We all did it. Our black folks did it. We jumped on it. We took the story, and we ran with that ball like Jim Brown over the freaking goal line. We went with it. And then what happened is, as everything unfolded, and when we found out the chick was lying, Al Sharpton and Jesse, the fun-loving rainbow man himself, ran out of the room and left that chick and was like, and ran far from her. And they still wiping the egg off their face about that crap today. And now your man, and just Nabawi talking about him, Mr. Rainbow Coalition, now he's talking about we should forgive and you know, we shouldn't demonize or tear down Paula Deen. Yeah, they lit his behind up. I was like, you can't do that. I was like, yeah, you've been so bad. Yeah, they gave you a rainbow push, all right. They lit him up for saying that, you know. And all I'll say about Paula Deen is this, and you'll probably be mad at me for this too, is that she shouldn't have never said the word. Nobody should say the word. Both sides shouldn't say the word, period. That's my only thing.
Mac, I totally agree with that because I don't even bring that word out of my
I'm trying. I'm trying. And ever since I've seen, and to be honest with you, my efforts have doubled since I've seen, you know, what Paula Deen's going through. I'm like, that word is really toxic. I mean, really for them it is, But for us, we need to. And but the thing that bothers me about us again is that we're not looking at it. When I say stuff like that to people, like you know, I hear people on Facebook and I jump in with comment and I'll say, look, none of us should use that word.
No,
because it's a term of endearment with us.
If we use that word. It's considered an accepted word, and it shouldn't be accepted word on from anybody, in my opinion.
Right.
So
that's the problem. Do I think it's fair that what's happening to her as far as right now? No. Do I think it's life? Yes, it's life. Nothing in life is fair. You know, you said it 30 years ago, but guess what? Not everybody found out you a target. When you become a star, you're a target. Whatever you do, people come at you. And, you know, she said in the deposition, and to be honest with you, you know, I'll be honest with you, I admire the lady for telling the truth, because I'm going to tell you, I don't know many white folks would have told you that in the deposition. I wouldn't have told them nothing, because they'd ask me, I'd have been like, hell no, I ain't say that word. I would have never said that. But she admitted to it 30 years ago, and I know the reason why she did it was probably because she figured it's 30 years ago. I did do it, but I changed. But, you know, people took it and ran. Again, we took it and ran. And, you know, like I said, man, you know, look, you reap what you sow, man. You know, y'all tear Paula Deen down, that's fine. But, you know, when, you know, black people got hot and bothered when Bill O'Reilly went after Ludacris and he lost the Pepsi contract. They got mad about that, about his lyrics, you know, the stuff he said. So I'm saying it's fair play. It comes and it goes. But, you know, do I think she should be punished for what she said 30 years ago? No. Do I think she should be punished because of what she put in the deposition? No. Do I think that it had nothing to do with the case that was going on? It was just put out there and it was shown, it was put out there and they burned her. They burned her to the ground. You know, people had axed the ground. People who didn't like Paula Deen went after her. They had her. So, I mean, they're getting her. You know, do I feel sorry for Paula Deen? No. Paula Deen made a whole boatload of money. She'll never have to work a day in her life again, and she'll be fine. Do I believe her apology was sincere? Yep. Do I believe that she apologized too damn much? Yes, you did. You should have made one apology and shut up and left it alone, because all you do is get the African American stirred up every time you come on TV and do it. They stir it up again. You just keep bringing back the memory. Leave it alone. Chill. What she should have done is apologize. What I understand is why she couldn't get a PR person. Because there's no way
exactly.
I would have been on
that. Exactly.
I'm like, how you didn't get a PR person? You got money. Get a PR person. A PR person would have said, make you one apology, do it, and shut up. And then just let the chips fall where they may, let the dust settle, and then we can do something different. You know, maybe 4 years from now, 3 years from now, it'll pass. You can come back a little bit. If anything, it gives you a chance to build a website and sell your own crap. You don't need all them people. Sell your own crap. She got plenty of fans, dude. She ain't
right.
She's not gonna suffer. If when the chick comes back from this, I'm telling you, watch. You watch what I say. Mark my words. Paula Deen gonna come back from this. You watch, and she's gonna be successful. You watch. If you know, and I know everybody's gonna. Because here's the thing: the people who don't like her ain't gonna like her anyway. If half the people that like her wasn't buying her crap anyway. It was probably, you know what I'm saying, and now this is what you get. So, you know, we just need to, in this country, we need to eliminate that word. We just need to eliminate that word, you know. Only when it applies to Barack Obama, though. No, I'm just playing. I said that. My bad. I'm just playing. I was playing. I had to shoot this joke. Come on, man. You know me, man. I'm the dude who calls Victor's too sweet. Come on, man. You know I got to play like that. I got to shoot shots sometimes. But... But be that as it may, man, really good discussion. Jerry, as always, you know, pushes my limits. I always know what I'm talking about. It's either you. When it's black folks, it's either you or it's Mikhail. It's one of y'all. Y'all always push me, and I appreciate that. Because when I get off the phone with y'all, I always know, okay, I was true to myself. I said what I said. You know, Jerry didn't leave me no ass. But that's okay. I at least stood up for myself, and I knew
I really believe what I believe.
You know,
it works both ways. So
yeah, and you know, I was like, at least I know I stood up for what I believed in. At least I know
absolutely.
Truly, okay, I believe that, and that's
absolutely.
What I like. I like that devil's advocate about you, because you'll come at me hard, you know, and You're probably the, like I said, you probably the only real liberal I really like. There's a few of them. You're probably the only black liberal I really like. I really have to say, you and Vic are probably like the two liberals I really, really dig. You know, I'm like, okay, they cool. You know, they're not fruitcakes and crazy like the other ones. They a little misguided, but
a little misguided.
Yeah, but some of these people on TV, I'd be just like, God dang. I'd be like, why do liberals look so? I'd be tripping. Like sometimes I'd be like, man, liberals are so. Like, why do liberals always look weird? You know what I'm saying? I'm like, Jerry and Vic don't look weird.
Stop.
They do. Liberals are weird. They're weirdos. They always look crazy. You know what I always say? Democratic strategist, John Marcy. And John Marcy got these big, thick glasses, hair out to your head. You're like, man, what in the hell? Like, what are you doing? You know, why do all of y'all look weird? You know what I'm saying? Like, oh, my God. It's just, like I said, man, I love the challenge, though. Black, as always, I love you being on here, man, and hearing you. You know, the network is going in a new direction, and I just want to give Jerry a chance to shout out his show, and I want to give Black a chance to shout out his show. So, Jerry, you go first and tell people about your show.
Yeah, it's called the World One Show is the Master Plan, which is 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. We talk about a lot of things, sports, fantasy, politics, social issues, a lot of things that happen current events, always, and Black and I are on Thursday nights, 8 p.m., which would be Black. You can follow from there.
Thursday nights, 8 to 9 p.m., FSP Crew Show. Follow us on Twitter, at FSP Crew Show. Let me tell you, your boy Mayweather, very impressive, man.
Yep.
Very impressive, man.
Yep.
I had a good time talking to him, even though he was blinging $1.5 million in my face. Still, I had a very impressive time talking to the guy, man.
Yeah, very down-to-earth guy. He'll talk to anybody.
Yeah.
Not a bad guy at all. I like that about it. That's why now you know why when I go down there and see him, it's not standoffish or stuff like that. It's very relaxed guy. He's a very outgoing guy. You know, if you come at him right, he'll come at you. He's very respectful. Real good. Actually, I'll be honest with you, his father is probably the most accessible person ever. His father is hilarious. That dude makes me laugh. That dude is funny. He thinks he's a rapper and a really down-to-earth guy. All of them are really down-to-earth people, man. I mean, people don't realize this, but, you know, what you see on film is not what they are every day. I mean, they just some funny people, man. But really, his father's a good dude, so... You know, like I said, man, you know, please follow their shows. Please tune in and listen to their shows. And, you know, listen to my girl Sylvia, who has a great show. I mean, we've added her to the network, and I think she's been stellar, man. I mean, she just brings it. I mean, her shows, from what I hear, I haven't listened to the shows too many because I'm always running out or going to a game. But from what I hear from the response on Facebook and Twitter and things, she lights it up. It's very informative and very good, hard hitting. Talks about some real good issues. I don't know if
Absolutely.
Have you had a chance to listen to her show at all?
Her shows are popping, man. She's got some real good guests and real good content, man. It's the popping show. Let me tell you.
Yeah, and that's what I thought because her guests are pretty good. And I just can't wait to see who she brings on next because every week I'm always looking like, who's she going to bring on next this time? You know, so she's got a big following. I think she's going to help the network a lot. You know, that's it. So, look, listen to our network, all our brother and sister shows. I mean, we got, what's her name, Kim? I can't remember Kim.
Kim hasn't been around. We're trying to find Kim to find out what's going on with her. Her show is usually on Tuesday afternoons,
mm-hmm.
but it hasn't been on for quite a while.
Okay.
I don't know what the status of that is, but we'll know, I guess, in the near future where that's going.
Okay.
Hey, Mike, shout out to your boy, too, man. The C Pleasant Drive is hilarious.
The C Pleasant what?
The C Pleasant Drive.
What's that?
The Nike commercial with KD.
Oh, yeah. I like that a lot. Yeah, that's a good one. But, yeah, he was supposed to play tonight at the Goodman, and it got rained out. He's actually, his shoes dropped today. His new shoes come in the stores today. And he was going to give away some shoes. We're going to have a barbecue out at the all paid for by Nike, free food and everything. And it got rained out, so... We will have to reschedule that or see what happens. But we'll see what happens. But anyway, I want to thank Jerry, my co-host. I want to thank Black
no
for
problem.
Popping in, as always.
As fantasy
football starts, y'all make sure y'all check Jerry's show out, because I'm going to tell you, I don't know what it is with Jerry, but him and NFL draft. If I ever decide to do another draft, another fantasy game, I'm going to have inside information or something. this dude, from what I understand, be just like, got people like, thank you, Jerry. Appreciate that, Jerry. Great pickup, Jerry. Didn't know that guy played, Jerry. So that's a good thing. So with that being said, we are out for another week. We will see you next Friday, 7 p.m. Talk to you. Be here. Thanks, guys. Talk to you later. Thank you, fans, for being here. Without you, I'm nothing. And I'll talk to you later. Peace.
Peace.